We're really happy to have Cortland Nelson joining us, and he's the Director of Parks and Trails at the Minnesota DNR. Welcome to the Roadhouse, Cortland.
Hey, it's nice to talk to you. Happy Friday.
Yeah, thank you. And it's a kind of a big Friday for somebody with your position, as the state parks are really rolling. We're watching all these vehicles driving up and down the shore, and we're very blessed up here in Cook County with the number of state parks. So your job has been, you've been rolling.
It's been an exciting, if not a little dramatic, last few months. Right now we're feeling pretty good about everything. It is Memorial Friday, and we're just about packed full. We've got a few open campsites at every park. I think your listeners probably know that we always have first come, first serve sites at every park. But more and more of them are reserved ahead of time, and people are making plans. And as of yesterday, people are rolling north. I live in Forest Lake, and over the last couple of days, there's just been a steady increase of people heading up, and ATVs and boats and bicycles and canoes and kayaks and funny-looking trailers and handsome trailers and all kinds of things. It's the summer's begun.
And we're hoping raincoats.
And raincoats. They're very, very true. Yeah, I'm. My wife and I are just about ready to leave for northwest Minnesota. We're going to do a little bit of a busman's holiday and visit Lake Bronson and Hayes Lake and Zippel Bay and Bemidji State Park, Bemidji Lake State Park, and a number of trails up there. So we're about to head out, too.
We, a year or so ago, I know I interviewed a fellow who'd written a book about the state parks in Minnesota, and I was amazed at not only how many, but how varied they are and how they crisscross across the state.
Yeah, it's quite an amazing system. You know, the first one was, of course, Itasca, the Headwaters, which was well over 100 years ago, and that was started by legislative action. During the next 20, 25 years, there were a few that were added, interstate, and I believe a couple down around the Twin Cities. And then it was really during the Depression era with the CCCs and the WPA, both of which were replete on the North Shore. Many, many park facilities were built, of course, across the country, not only in Minnesota. But that was really boom time for the state park system. And then in the 50s and 60s, a number were added. That's also when our state trails, like the Gitche-Gamie and the water trails that we have around the state, began to work their way through the legislative process and get created. We've had a couple of state parks or state recreation areas every decade since the 70s. We're up to 74 state park and state recreation areas, and then we've got 25 state trails and 31 state water trails. So it is quite a system of protection and recreation and outdoor activities.
I notice, when you mention some of the busiest state parks, of course, you're looking at mainly overnight stays. I imagine that's what you can track the most. A lot of parks are visited just by people passing by.
Yeah, our day use is actually our busier parks are basically because of day use. Gooseberry, of course, and Tetagoosh up in your neck of the woods. Fort Snelling is the most visited park, and that makes some sense because it's right in the middle of the city, the Twin Cities, and it's got trails and lots of roads, and that's all day use. There's no overnight camping there. But our typical state park will have, a quarter of a million to half a million visitors of all types, the great majority of those from sometime in April till sometime in the fall. Many of the parks get a little bit of a bump in during the color season, during leaf off in the fall, as you well know. And then we get some very steady winter business. We had an oddity this winter that you might be interested in. Of course, there was hardly any snow anywhere, and our visitation went up for winter visitation. We just assumed that, people were getting a little cabin fever and figured, well, if there's no snow, we don't have to worry about snowshoes or skis. We can just go walk. And we thought it was kind of interesting that our total, and of course this is almost all day use stuff, but our total visitation went up in January and February with the absence of snow. And then things kind of turned around with the very good weather that we had in March. People got thinking about the summer, and we came out of our reservation problems in good shape. And people started making reservations, so we're about 4% of where we were last year with reservations, and I'm expecting a very good summer.
You know, we've heard some statistics about the use of the boundary waters, and it seems as though the majority of the people who use the boundary waters tend to be people that started out using them in the 70s, 60s and 70s, and young people just don't seem to be part of that equation. Do you keep track of any of that type of information in the state park system?
Yeah, we do. It's more than anecdotal, but it's less than real good social science. And what I mean by that is that every 5 years we do a resident survey, and then we also do a park survey. And so we have a pretty good idea of the family makeup and the group's size and where people come from and how long they stay. And one of the things we get out of that is a sense of what the age is. In our industry, it's quite well known, and many of us are concerned about the fact that young people are not getting out of doors as much as other generations have. And we, along with a lot of other service providers, and I'm sure the private sector, are trying to figure out ways to get kids out of doors, to get them learning new skills, to get them to use their technology in new ways so they can be out of doors. And we do try and factor that into a lot of our programs. We've kind of gone back to where we were in the 60s and the 70s. With many more programs, a lot more formal activity in terms of skill training. Now, that might sound kind of funny to some of your listeners, but there's just a whole bunch of folks who they don't know how to fish, they don't know how to camp, they don't have any experiences when it comes to some of the outdoor things. They may never have been in a canoe or in a kayak. And so a couple of years ago, we instituted a program called I Can. And behind that is I can camp, I can climb, I can fish, I can paddle, and we also have an archery program. And the attempt of all of those is to get non-users and particularly young people learning a skill, overcoming maybe some of that apprehension that they might have, and so that they can develop into some type of outdoor persons and hopefully go to the boundary waters once they've developed some skills or be curious about heading up to the North Shore. A first-time camper doesn't generally just jump in a vehicle and run up to the North Shore and go camping. Usually they start out with a regional park or a park around the Twin Cities with a little bit of an overnight experience. And once they've had that, then they may go to a retail outfit and maybe get some better equipment, or they have a friend who takes them out. But the whole idea around all of that is to help non-users and young people learn some skills, have them appreciate some basic outdoor values, if you will, and gain some confidence. And whether they fish or whether they ride a bike or whether they hunt or whether they ATV, the whole point is to get them out of doors and develop some outdoor skills.
I noticed that there's a archery in the park event happening this weekend at Temperance State Park.
Oh, good. Okay. Yeah, I wasn't aware of that. Yeah, that's very fun. And that's exactly what I was talking about. There'll be folks who signed up for that, and they've likely never had a bow or an arrow in their hand, and we want to have a chance to teach them about bow safety and how to appropriately shoot a target. And of course that likely will lead to, or hopefully will lead to, some lifelong activities for some of those folks.
I'm kind of thinking I might stay clear of Temperance State Park.
It's going to be pretty safe, I guarantee you. But it's very fun, and the kids have a lot of fun with it. It's you know, it's kind of instant reward. It's not like you're hunting something. There's always an effort to try and put smiles on faces, and so shooting at targets is a lot easier for somebody who's brand new at that sport.
I noticed a couple of others that were interesting. You got an outdoor photography workshop down at Mille Lacs Cathio State Park, and a fossil field trip at Whitewater State Park. All those things are just designed to get more people into the park system and out enjoying nature, I assume.
Yeah, they are. It's really two things. One is that, and the other is, I think it's fair to say that a lot of our visitors have higher expectations when it comes to activities. They want to have more things provided for them. They want to have more things scheduled during the day. When we get phone calls from young moms about what activities are there, you know, those are the kind of questions that they want to have. And that was a little bit different, I think, in a couple of recent generations where we would do a campfire program or we had some activities, but we didn't necessarily set ourselves up so that we were providing what might be a camp-like activity schedule for the day. And we have just found that young families in particular, they're used to that kind of regimen. They're expecting those kind of services, and so that's part of it. And then the other part of it is that we have tremendous natural and cultural resources in all of our parks, as you mentioned at the beginning of the interview. And so we really have an obligation and take great pride in getting our park visitors out and having them understand the dimensions of Carlton Peak and why that's such an important icon on the shore of Lake Superior, and the mining history in other parks, and geology, and Native American history, the Voyageurs era up north of you there. So it's lots of stories to be told, and we try and tell them well, and within reason provide a lot of opportunities. We're getting more and more into both online services as well as we're looking at apps that can be downloaded so that people who have smartphones can basically entertain themselves and learn by themselves when they're in a park environment. And that's, I think, going to be another big wave of the future.
Hmm. You know, you're director of parks and trails, and there's a, it's not new, but it's relatively new to most people, the idea that there is a waterways trail for kayakers along, for instance, Lake Superior. How much do you know about that, and what kind of changes may be happening there, improvements?
Well, this is a program that goes back some decades now, and basically it was an effort to develop a Lake Superior water trail from basically from Duluth north, and at appropriate spots, which is always a debate in terms of distance and what's a little bit of public land to provide places so that those kayakers or those canoers can get off and have day use opportunities or have a place to camp. And so it's been in development for many years, and we are always trying to move that along. We partner with the federal government at some of those. Some of the major installations are, for instance, at Two Harbors with the work that's going on there, and at other places along the North Shore. There tends to be more use farther south, but
so is there a trail system developed where people can expect there's going to be maps and they can see where their next stop would be as they kayak up the shore?
Yeah, there's information both online and then in our mapping system and at a number of these sites. And over time, there's some pretty good understanding by the users about how to take advantage of those getting off the water opportunities, as well as what they call the Safe Harbor Program, which is for all boaters when storms come up and that kind of thing on Lake Superior, a place to get off the water in a safe manner.
Now, we had a problem in the past, well, as you know very well, and of course most of us know very well, was with the government shutdown, amazingly enough, shut down the park system too. I understood that there was some provisions in the legislature, and I don't know where that went, to prevent that from happening in the future if we had another shutdown. Do you know anything about that?
Well, I think you described it very accurately, and I don't think there's a lot of detail to it other than that should there be in the biennial budget session some kind of a repeat of the events of last summer, that state parks and trails would be open for business. And there's many, many financial and management issues behind it. So if we ever face that again, I'd probably have more questions than answers about how that would work. Mm-hmm. But that was the intent. That was really the intent. And it was hard on us. It was hard on the local communities. We lost a couple of $1 million in lost revenue. Of course, these are the busiest weeks of the summer from July 1st to July 21st.
I think it was an economic, you can't use the word disaster, but it was an economic problem felt throughout the whole state, not just what the DNR lost, but also what communities lost. Do you have any idea what that may have
reached? You know, it would be all anecdotal other than our situation. I know there were some cooperators and partners that we have who were financially hurt at a high level. But you're right. You know, our standard that has been validated by research, social science research, says that people spend between $25 and $30 a day that are state park visitors. And so that might mean gas, that might mean food, that might mean a variety of things. Well, you get hundreds of thousands of people who aren't spending that money, and you know, that's a lot of dollars. Now, some of it gets spent in other ways. You know, people did other things, certainly. But along the North Shore, where we've got a dozen or more state parks and we're all closed, you know, there's a lot of meals that weren't eaten, there was a lot of gear that wasn't bought, and there were a lot of overnights that weren't paid to somebody because we were closed.
Well, we're seeing a lot of folks right from our studio now. We're watching people drive by on their way up, and they're dragging all their stuff with them to camp out. So we're looking for a very busy weekend, and I'm sure throughout the park system it's going to be just like that. We've been speaking with Cortland Nelson. He is Director of Parks and Trails Division at the Minnesota DNR. And Cortland, I want to thank you so much for giving us your time. I know you want to get rolling so you can have your park experience as well. So we sure appreciate your time this evening.
Thank you very much. I really enjoyed it, and I hope you and all your listeners have a very enjoyable and safe weekend.
Thank you.